Summer is here, and I have to admit something. Please don't judge me. I don't understand fishing. Like, I don't get it. Some of you here, you might love it. The pastor that I worked with at Gateway loves fishing. So when I filled out this, why do you want to work here? I wrote down explicitly that when it said your interests and hobbies, I said not fishing, because I didn't want him to invite me. Because I just don't understand how people invest so much into it and absolutely love it. Like, you will spend hundreds of dollars on bait and gear and thousands of dollars on a boat and drive for hours upon hours, launch the boat, find the perfect spot, and then you'll just sit there quietly for hours. Meanwhile, I'm thinking, like, we could just go to Fortino's and get some fish. My dad would go out at the cottage and he would come back and he'd be like, check out what I got. He'd open the cooler up and pull out like two fish. I'm like, wow. So then as a kid, he would drag me out fishing with him after dinner. And the worst part of it was that we would never go too far from where we were staying. So then I could still see the shore. So while we were sitting there doing nothing, not catching any fish, I could see my friends having the time of their life on the shore. They're playing and running to the tuck shop and just living life to the fullest. And meanwhile, I'm there on a boat. So again, please forgive me. But I remember thinking as a young kid, how does anyone enjoy doing nothing? Because you can have the right boat, the right equipment, the right bait. You can know the water. You can know the right spots. You can do everything right, but still come home empty. And I wonder if you've experienced that. Maybe not fishing, but just that feeling. Like, you've worked hard. You've done everything you know how to do. You've prayed. You've planned. You've fasted. You've tried. And somehow you still have nothing to show for it. Like, you're tired, you're disappointed. And maybe you even start to wonder, what am I supposed to do now? So today we're beginning this brand new summer series, Gone Fishing. The tagline I was gonna use is following the one who calls. So before you think this is a series about cottages and bass boats and vacations, it's actually about something so much bigger. It's about learning to join Jesus with where he's already at work. Because throughout this series, we're going to look at these moments when Jesus met people on boats, on beaches, in storms, and beside the water. And each time, he invited those people to discover something about what it means to follow him. Because following Jesus means that it will sometimes take you places you never expected to go. It will sometimes require you to trust him when you don't understand what he's doing. And sometimes Jesus will ask you to do something that makes absolutely no sense until you do it. So if you have your Bible, turn with me to John chapter 21. Because in John 21, we begin with this scene of seven of Jesus' disciples in a boat. And they're exhausted, they're confused, and after an entire night of fishing, they've caught nothing. But to understand why that matters, we need to understand how they got there. Before this moment in a boat happened, it's important to know that Jesus had already been crucified. He had been buried. He had been sealed in a tomb. But as we know, 3 days later, the tomb was empty and Jesus is alive. And the disciples already know he's alive because he's appeared to them more than once. The resurrection has happened, but the mission hasn't started yet. Pentecost hasn't happened. The church hasn't been launched. Thousands haven't come to faith. The gospel hasn't begun spreading across the Roman Empire yet. The disciples are living in this space between resurrection and what's next. Between what Jesus has done and what Jesus is about to do. And I think one of the reasons this story matters so much is because most of us know what it's like to live in that in-between. Like, you know God's been faithful. You know he's brought you this far. But you don't know what's next. You're waiting and waiting and wondering. And you're trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do now? And in that uncertainty, Peter makes a simple announcement. He just says, I'm going fishing. Now, on the surface, that sounds ordinary. Sounds like some of us might say this summer. Not myself, but maybe some of you. But remember, these aren't weekend fishermen. Like, Peter isn't grabbing his Yeti cooler and heading to the boat to go spend some alone time. Like, fishing was his old way of life, his old profession, the thing he knew before Jesus called him. So there's something deeply human happening here. Because I think it shows us that when we don't know what to do next, we often go back to what we know. And that's exactly where Jesus is going to meet them. So if you're in John 21, let's read this together. I do have it in the NLT version, if you're wondering why it's a bit different than the church Bibles. But John 21, starting in verse 1, later Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there: Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We'll come too, they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, fellows, have you caught any fish? No, they replied. Then he said, throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some. So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, it's the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work, jumped into the water, and headed to the shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to the shore, for they were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire, and some bread. Bring some of the fish you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. Now, come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. Can you picture that? The sun is just beginning to come up. The water's calm. A fire is crackling on the beach. There's the smell of fresh fish, fresh bread. You have these seven exhausted fishermen sitting around the fire, and Jesus is making them breakfast. Like, just sit with that for a moment. The risen Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, the one who defeated death, the one that John told us was there from the beginning of time, the one through whom all things were made, is cooking them breakfast. And that's probably not what they were expecting to find that morning. And I wonder if it's what we expect from Jesus either. Because sometimes we imagine that the places where Jesus does his most important work have got to be the spiritual places. Like, Jesus must do his best work at church services and prayer meetings and Bible studies and missions trips. And of course, Jesus meets us there. But throughout the Gospels, Jesus has this remarkable habit of showing up in the middle of ordinary life. At dinner tables, at weddings, on roads and homes, on beaches, on boats, and here sitting beside a charcoal fire. Peter went fishing because that's what he knew how to do. He was working. He was doing something ordinary. And Jesus showed up there. And I just feel like some of us need to be reminded of that today. Because we can begin to believe that if God is really going to use our lives, well, then we need to become somebody we're not. It's like, oh man, if God's ever going to use me, I need more Bible knowledge, more confidence, more experience. I have to know exactly what I'm going to say. I have to have everything figured out, all my ducks in a row. But Jesus doesn't wait for ordinary life to stop before he begins working. He enters into ordinary life. And look who Jesus keeps choosing to use. It's fishermen, it's tax collectors, it's ordinary people, people like us. People who don't have things figured out, who have doubts, who have failed time and time again. People who just don't understand what Jesus is doing. But Jesus meets them there. He meets fishermen while they're fishing. And I believe he meets teachers while they're teaching, and students while they're walking to school, and retirees while they're figuring out what's this season of life all about. Parents making lunches, business owners making decisions. And maybe one of the reasons we keep missing what Jesus is doing is because we're waiting for something extraordinary. We're waiting for the big opportunity to appear, the unmistakable calling, the perfect moment, the aha voice from heaven. But meanwhile, Jesus is standing on the shore of your life, already at work. He's speaking, he's inviting. You see, you don't have to go somewhere extraordinary to join Jesus. You have to learn to recognize where Jesus is already at work. And that's what I don't want you to miss in this text. When Jesus first appears on the shore, they don't recognize him. Verse 4 says, at dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples didn't see who he was. He was there, he was speaking, he was working, but they don't know it's him. How often does that happen to us? We're asking God to show up and he's already standing there. Or we're asking him to do something new, but he's inviting us to pay attention. Because the first thing I want us to see is Jesus is often at work before we recognize him. These seven men had spent the entire night doing something they know how to do. These aren't amateurs. These are experienced fishermen. Peter has probably fished this lake thousands of times. They know the water, the boat, the nets, the equipment. They know where the fish are supposed to be, but yet after an entire night, there's just nothing. So they cast the nets, pull them in, empty. Cast the nets, pull them in, empty. Hour after hour. Have you ever been there in a place where you know what you're doing? You've done this before. You have experience, but somehow it's still not working. The marriage feels distant. The business isn't growing. The child is still struggling. The prayer you've been praying still isn't answered. The person you've been inviting to come with you to church still hasn't come. The ministry that you've poured your heart into just isn't bearing the fruit that you wanted to see. And maybe the hardest part isn't simply that the nets are empty, but it's that you don't know what else to even try. Because empty nets, they're one thing when you've tried, but they're another thing entirely when you've done everything you know how to do. And here's where the story gets good, because verse 4 tells us that Jesus is standing on the shore, but they don't recognize him. And then this stranger calls out across the water, "Friends, have you caught any fish?" Now, I don't know how you hear that question, but after fishing all night and having nothing to show for it, that's not the question I would want someone asking me. Did you catch anything? No, I didn't. Thanks. And not only that, but this stranger to them gives professional fishermen fishing advice. Throw your net on the right-hand side of the boat. You'll get some. Like, we all know Peter at this point, right? Like, he's hot-headed. Like, he has a bit of a temper. Like, he's got to be thinking, like, seriously? The other side? Like, gee, thanks. I didn't think of that all night. Like, I love putting myself in his shoes because he's got to be thinking, you think the problem is that I've been fishing here, but if I move 6 feet over here, well, that's the magic bullet. But I love how ordinary this instruction is. Jesus doesn't say, go to another lake, get a bigger boat, get better nets, try harder, stay out for another 6 hours. He simply says, try the other side. And what I'm getting at is I wonder if sometimes our greatest limitation isn't our lack of ability, but it's our assumption that we already know where the fish are. Right? Like we do this. Like we find something that works, so we keep doing it. And then we do it again and again and again. And eventually, what once was an act of obedience suddenly becomes routine. We do it because we've always done it. What once required faith suddenly becomes familiar and comfortable. And without realizing, we stop asking, Jesus, where are you leading? And we start saying, okay, Jesus, just bless what we're already doing. But there's a difference between those two questions. One prayer says, Jesus, here's my plan. Can you make it work? The other prayer says, Jesus, where are you working? And how can I join you? Because I think that's one of the most dangerous places we can get to as followers of Jesus. It's not rebellion or walking away or rejecting Jesus, but it's becoming so comfortable with Jesus that we stop listening for what he might say next. Because experience is a gift. Wisdom matters, planning matters, strategy matters, but experience can also create assumptions. Because we start believing, I know how this works. I know how people are going to respond. I know what my neighbor already thinks about Christianity. I know my teenager isn't interested in any of this stuff. That person will never come to church with me. I'm not the kind of person God could use. That's like saying, I know where the fish are, Jesus. Don't bother. But Jesus stands on the shore and says, try the other side. Try the conversation you've been avoiding. Invite the person that you've already decided will say no. Serve somewhere you don't feel qualified. Pray again for the person that you've almost given up on. Open your home, mentor the student, not because the other side of the boat is somehow magical, but because Jesus spoke. And that's the difference. The disciples don't experience this abundance because they developed a better strategy. They experience abundance because they responded to a voice that they didn't fully recognize, but in responding, they discovered it was Jesus. I love how simply John describes their response. Verse 6, it says, so they did. And I don't want us to rush past that because they could have argued, they could have explained their experience. They could have ignored the voice from the shore. They could have said, like, we've already tried. You don't even go here. If you get that movie reference. But John gives us these three simple words. So they did. They cast the net, and suddenly the same lake, the same boat, the same nets, the same fishermen, completely different results. Their experience didn't change, the effort didn't change, the equipment didn't change. What changed is that they listened. Church, experience is a gift until it keeps us from listening. And perhaps that's the question some of us need to sit with this morning. Have I become so confident in what I know that I've stopped listening for what Jesus might be saying? That we've stopped listening for what he's calling us into next because, no, my life is good. I've got it good right now. I don't want to mess that up. But sometimes following Jesus means being willing to admit he may know something that I don't. He may see something that I can't. He may be working somewhere that I haven't looked. And sometimes the distance between empty nets and abundance is simply the willingness to say, Jesus, if you say so, I'll try the other side. But this is where I want to be careful, because it would be easy to hear this message and walk away thinking, okay, I just need to try something different. I need to take a risk. I need to shake things up. And sure, maybe that's a good leadership principle, I don't know. But that is not the gospel. You see, the miracle wasn't in the geography, the left side or the right side. There wasn't something magical about the other side of the boat. If Jesus hadn't spoken, the other side would have been just as empty as the original. You see, the power wasn't in the location. The power was Jesus. That's the gospel. The power isn't in our efforts, isn't in our strategies. The power is Jesus. So are we listening to the voice of Jesus? And Jesus isn't giving his disciples this formula. He's teaching them to trust his voice. Sometimes he says, go. Sometimes he says, stay. Sometimes he says, speak. Other times he says, you got to be quiet. Sometimes Jesus says, step out of the boat. And other times he says, stay in the boat. Cast the net again. The point isn't learning the right technique. The point is learning to trust the right voice. Because changing sides of the boat without listening to Jesus is just fishing in a different empty spot. But notice what happens. Jesus speaks, they respond, and the nets fill. And it's at that moment John recognizes him. He's like, that's the Lord. And I love that, because they obey before they fully recognize. But after they obey, they see Jesus more clearly. Because clarity often comes on the other side of obedience. That's why people who aren't yet followers of Christ have such a hard time sometimes wrestling with the faith, because they haven't jumped into it. They haven't taken that step. And they're like, this seems crazy to me. And yeah, to the average fisherman fishing on this side, casting your net on that side also seems crazy. Clarity comes on the other side of obedience. More often than not, we don't usually recognize what Jesus is doing until after we've trusted him enough to take that next step. Not because obedience earns the miracle, not because our faith forces God's hand, but because obedience puts us in a posture to participate in what Jesus is already doing. And that distinction matters. Because there's something else in this story that I don't want you to miss. The disciples have been fishing all night. They've caught nothing. Jesus tells them where to cast. Their nets fill with fish. They drag it toward the shore. And when they finally arrive, they discover something extraordinary. Jesus already has fish. Like, I'm not sure if you noticed that on the first reading. Before they ever bring their catch to shore, there's already a fire burning. There's already bread. There's already fish, which means Jesus didn't need what they caught. He wasn't standing on the shore saying, guys, I'm starving. Come on, catch me some breakfast. Before they recognized him, Jesus was already working. He was already preparing. Before they listened, Jesus was already providing. Before their nets were full, Jesus already had everything he needed. Which brings us to possibly the most freeing truth in this story. Jesus invites us to participate in what he's doing, not because he needs us, but because he loves us. He wants the best for us. He wants us to experience life and life to the full. And yet, verse 10 says, bring some of the fish you've caught. Jesus doesn't need their fish, but he makes room for their fish. He allows what they've caught through his provision because of his direction to become part of what he's preparing. And friends, that is a beautiful picture of grace. Jesus could do it without them, but he chooses to involve them. He isn't desperate. He isn't lacking. The mission of God does not depend on our ability to hold it all together. God doesn't need the well. but he's invited us to be part of what he's doing in this community and beyond. God doesn't need Kevin, but he invites Kevin. God doesn't need you, but he invites you to build his kingdom here in Binbrook. God doesn't need our programs, our buildings, our strategies, our abilities, but for reasons I will never fully understand, he loves to invite ordinary people to participate in extraordinary things. He says, bring your fish, bring what I've given you, your gifts, experiences, resources, home, influence, time, story, willingness. Bring what you have and put it in my hands. And buckle up, because things are going to get crazy exciting. That's freedom. Because it means the weight of the mission doesn't rest on you, but you still get to be part of what God is doing. And I need to tell you something. I haven't shared this with too many people yet, but a few weeks ago, I was at our denomination's General Assembly in Calgary. And the evening that Shayla Visser was speaking, she's the National Director of Alpha Canada, she was speaking to this room full of pastors and leaders. And she preached from this text, John 21. And she talked about what God's doing across Canada, people who are spiritually curious, young people who are asking questions about Jesus, people walking into churches for the first time, students desperate to share their faith. And she challenged us to ask whether Jesus might be calling the church in Canada to cast the net on the other side of the boat. And at the end of her message, she invited people to come forward for prayer. And I'm not always the person to go forward in moments like that. Like, I get it. It's vulnerable. We ask you guys to do it every week. You're kind of thinking, who's watching me? Is everyone watching me? What do I say? What do I need prayer for? What's going to happen? But that night, I got up and I walked down to the front. I didn't know what I was going forward for. I just knew I needed prayer. And when I got to the front, I realized something. I just realized, I'm tired. And I'm not tired because I'm discouraged. I'm not tired because I want to quit. Quite the opposite. I'm tired because of the excitement I'm carrying. I'm tired because I can see what God is doing here. And I'm tired because our church is growing and people are coming and kids are coming and students are coming and new families are coming through our doors and we're reaching people we haven't reached before. And there are opportunities in front of us that a few years ago just didn't exist. And standing there that night, I realized God is doing more than one person can carry. And in that moment, when this man asked me what he could pray for, I responded with, I need more hands on the net. I've been asking the wrong question. I've been asking Kevin, like, how are you going to work harder? How am I going to add another program? How am I going to plan another event, lead another ministry, solve another problem, catch more fish? But I just realized Jesus isn't asking me to fish harder. I believe he's asking us to put more hands on the net. Because did you notice what happened? Verse 6 says, the catch was so large, they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. So what happens? The others help. They all grab the net. They all pull. They bring the boat to shore. They drag the net onto the beach. And that's the picture I can't get out of my head for our church, because I don't want our church to be a church where a handful of people work harder and harder and where everyone else watches from the shore. That's not what Jesus is inviting us into. I think he's inviting us to become the kind of church where everyone asks, where can I put my hand on the net? There is so much opportunity at our door. Like, it is crazy exciting. If I could win the lottery, which I don't play, so it would be an extreme miracle. Like, I have dreams and visions, but again, those are mine. And I'm trying to pay attention to where's God calling us to fish? What's he inviting us into? And maybe you hold the net by serving once a month in Kids Zone. Maybe you hold the net by simply learning some of the kids and teenagers' names. Maybe you hold the net by opening your home, by leading a small group, by arriving early to pray with our prayer team, by inviting your neighbor, by mentoring someone younger than you. Maybe by running Alpha. Maybe you hold the net by sitting across the table from someone who's just asking questions and you simply listen. Not everyone will hold the same part of the net, but there's room for all of us to put our hands on it. I don't know exactly what the other side of the boat looks like just yet, but I have some ideas. And I believe we should seriously be praying into some of these. Like, what small groups are we going to offer this fall? Should we run Alpha this fall? Should we run Rooted? I believe we should begin thinking about how we can help our students reach their friends by developing our youth ministry and expanding into a senior high ministry, which again seems crazy because we don't have a lot of senior high yet, but these kids are at our doorstep. And we have kids in here who are desperate to lean into Jesus and to invite their friends to hear about Jesus. There are people in our community who are spiritually curious and more open than we realize. But again, I don't want to stand here and say this is Kevin's 5-year plan. Everybody grab a hold. Because that's what the story warns us against. The goal isn't to find a new strategy. The goal is to listen to Jesus. So I want to become the kind of church that prays, Jesus, where are you working? What are you doing in Binbrook? Who are you drawing? Where are you opening your doors? What are you asking? And when Jesus says, cast over there, oh, we're gonna cast over there. When I got that message saying, hey, there's 2 possible portable opportunities, I started the permit work with Hamilton that day, and I've been trying to trust Jesus. If this is what you're calling us into next, then let's do it. I want us to be the kind of church that when Jesus is cast over there, then that's where we're gonna cast. Even if we've never done it before, even if we're not sure how it's gonna work out, even if it requires more of us to put our hands on the net, because I don't wanna spend the next 5 years fishing harder in the same empty water if Jesus is standing on the shore pointing somewhere else. So maybe this morning, Jesus is asking you the same question. What's your other side? What have you been avoiding, resisting? Where have you been afraid to take that next step? And this doesn't just apply to us as a church, but it also applies to us individually. We are living in an exciting season, and we have a choice. We can look at what God has already done and said, look at the fish we've caught. And we can celebrate, and we should celebrate, but we can't stop there. Because what if God is preparing us for more than a handful of people? What if Jesus isn't asking us to fish harder? What if he's asking us to put more of our hands on the net? There are people we haven't met yet, kids we haven't met yet, students we haven't met yet, families we haven't met yet. And what if they're just waiting for the invitation? For a program like Alpha that we can sit around and ask questions and learn about Jesus? What if Jesus is already at work and we don't even see him or hear him yet? Let's take time this summer to listen. And if he tells us to cast somewhere new, are we going to trust him enough to do it? Because just as we move into this time of communion, there's one more thing I don't want us to miss. Because after the miracle, after the obedience, after the nets were full, Jesus doesn't just send them back out. He says, come and have breakfast. Before Jesus sends them, he feeds them. Before he asks Peter to care for his sheep, he feeds him. Before the mission continues, there's a table. And what makes this so beautiful is there's a small detail in the text that John gives us. He kept saying that it was a charcoal fire. And he only uses the Greek word for charcoal twice. The other time it was used was when Peter was standing beside a charcoal fire, denying that he knew Jesus. And now Jesus brings Peter back to this charcoal fire, not to humiliate him, not to discard him, but to feed him. And Jesus meets Peter in the shadow of his greatest failure, and he prepares a table for him. And I believe that's what we all need this morning. Maybe you're tired, maybe you're carrying something heavy, maybe your nets feel empty, maybe you're even just excited about what God's doing, but you know you need strength that you don't have. Maybe you walked in like Peter was feeling, aware of your failures, wondering whether Jesus could still use you. But the invitation of Jesus isn't to try harder, do better. The invitation is come. Come to the table. Receive what you could never provide for yourself. Before he asks anything from you, he gives himself to you. And that's what we remember in communion. On the night that he was betrayed, he took bread, he broke it, and he said, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And then he took the cup, and he said, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood poured out for you." The bread reminds us that Jesus gave himself for us, and the cup reminds us that Jesus poured his life out for us. So we come to this table not because you've worked hard enough, not because your nets are full, or that you have it all figured out. You come because Jesus has prepared the table. And just like that morning on the shore, the invitation is still, come. The one who calls you is the one who will feed you. So in a moment, I'm going to just pray. And then as Mel plays softly in the background, I'm just going to invite you to come forward, grab a piece of bread, dip it in the grape juice, and eat this in remembrance of him. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you that you meet us where we are. Thank you that before you ask anything from us, you invite us to come to you. For those who are tired, give us rest. For those carrying regret, remind them of your grace. And for those who need direction, help them hear your voice. As we come to your table this morning, help us remember that everything we need is found in you. Feed us, restore us, and prepare us to join you in what you are doing. In your name we pray. Amen.